Cats, and welcome to another episode of Observations. I'm your host, Sovereign Sire, brought to you by the good people or not so good people at Julieland.com. As always, I'm joined by the nefarious Mr. Richard Avery.
Hello, how can I help you today?
I don't know if you can help me with anything.
I know. I'm having one of those days.
Well, today here with me in the Sov Pod is Rye Silverman.
Hello.
Rye is a stand-up comedian locally based in Los Angeles. Why don't you tell us a little more about yourself?
I'm openly trans, and
Do you like walks on the beach?
I do like walks on the beach. Yeah, like I said, I'm hetatarius. Exactly. Yeah.
Do you like puppies?
I do have, I mean, walking like on the beach is pretty good.
But do you like puppies or kittens?
I'm allergic to dogs, so okay. I like kittens.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, no, I like puppies, but I just, unfortunately, they make me ill, okay. So.
Because I like the way you said, tell us a little about yourself. That's all I could think. I felt like it was
combination shy wild.
I thought it was like the dating game. The dating game. Okay, bachelor.
If we were making Whoopi.
Listen, I'm always interviewing for dates on this show. Yeah. I think I've asked out everyone that's been on the show. Exactly. Like afterwards, I'm like, hey, you know, you want to have a girlfriend?
This is really not a podcast. I'm not recording.
You know, I did a gig one time, a comedy gig in Michigan where we drove. It's funny, it gets on the last show. We talked about my road gigs. Yeah. We did this gig and we drove through this almost like snowstorm to get there. And then we got there and the bar had forgotten that the gig was booked. And so they didn't promote it at all. And there was literally nobody at the bar. On top of it, there was a bad snowstorm. So nobody was even going to be at the bar. And it was just me and the comic that we drove together. And the guy who had booked the gig was another comic. And he kept like, oh, let's hang out. Let's just play darts. Let's talk. And after a while, I go, we stayed for way too long because we were waiting for him to pay us because we were like, we're still getting paid. We drove here. And on the way home, I said to my buddy, the other comic, I was like, Do you think there was ever a show, or do you think Mark just booked people to hang out with him tonight? Like, you think he's like, I don't have any friends up here in Davis, in Michigan, so I'm gonna invite people over.
it's like I'm gonna pay people to be my friend.
Yeah.
It's like dating. Was it like on Tinder or something? He just found you guys or something?
Yeah. I book all my comedy shows through Tinder.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, Tinder is kind of a form of comedy.
It is a little
it's
bit.
It's like a very, it's be very alt comedy. It would be like maybe.
It's very
maybe
conceptual.
Very conceptual and like long form.
Yeah.
Like I could definitely see, I keep waiting for the Stuart Lee piece on Tinder.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with Stuart Lee, but if you're not, you should definitely check out Stuart Lee.
I'll check out Stuart Lee.
He's pretty amazing. And since you're a Doctor Who fan.
Yes.
And he's definitely, I think he would just definitely be up your alley. One, he's British comedian, but two, very much like long form, very smart.
All right.
A lot of Harry Potter jokes, a lot of.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Should have started with that. I would have been, Stuart Lee, Harry Potter. I would have been like put my mic down, go.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's derisive of Harry Potter, but in the best way possible.
I have no problem being derisive of things that I like. I have a Doctor Who podcast, and I'm not always a fan of Doctor Who. So.
Let's talk about the Doctor Who podcast, because part of the reason that I'm interested is that I have never gotten into Doctor Who. I've watched a couple episodes. Mm-hmm. I don't get it, but all of my friends are like, what do they call it? Whovians?
Whovians, yeah.
Yeah. What? So I thought what would be a fun podcast would be, can you explain to me why this show is so great? Like, why do you have a podcast about it? What is the appeal?
My first question ultimately is his name really Doctor Who?
No.
What's his name?
His name is the Doctor, and it's a running gag on the show where he goes, I'm the Doctor, and people go, Doctor Who, and that's kind of where the name came from. Now, there are a couple...
Doesn't he have a real name?
So it's kind of like one of those things where... So he's an alien, and...
Oh, he's an alien?
He's an alien. He's from a planet called Gallifrey, and he's called a Time Lord. And the thing is...
he's from a planet called...
I would just
we're
like
we're
to pause
about
for...
50 years of mythology.
I know.
The show,
I was waiting for you to say his name is Nigel, and he's from a little town in Liverpool.
Yeah.
Grew up next to Paul McCartney.
His name is Pete Best, and he's a doctor of sound. The idea of it is that this race, like the idea is like their actual name has like power over you, almost like a magical. It's not magical per se. Okay. But the idea is like you go by a name you choose for yourself.
Okay.
So like he's the doctor, and there's an antagonist on the show named the Master who shows up once in a while. The idea is it's kind of a play on like. The doctor being like a degree you can get, you can be a doctor and you can be a master, but it's also the idea of like the doctor heals people and the master tries to control people. Right. So that's kind of like
I'm the photographer.
Right, it'd be that kind of thing. There's like definitely like So that's the idea.
I think I'm going to write a post called Photographer Who?
So my question is, like, so this show has been on how long?
It's been on since 1963. It was off during like the 80s and 90s. There was an attempt in 96 to bring it back. There's a TV movie starring Paul McGann that was actually made by Fox. And it was like an attempt to make a backdoor like revival of the show that would actually be more American than British, because it was like a joint production between the BBC and Fox TV.
Okay.
It did not do well, so it did not get picked up. And then the show didn't come back proper until 2005.
How many actors have played Doctor Who?
Oh, okay, so it had a long hiatus then.
Yeah, yeah. What's cool about it is that there is complete continuity between the 80s version of it and what came back in 2005 and the 96 movie. They all work as, like, they can still exist in the same universe. It's not right. like it's not like a reboot where they started from scratch.
Right, right.
To answer your question about how many actors have played the Doctor, there is... Technically, so we're on the 12th Doctor.
Right.
There's also William Hurt, who played a Doctor who kind of existed between the 8th and 9th, which is a weird continuity thing where he wasn't called the Doctor at the time because there was a war happening. And then there's also been like other actors who have played like the first Doctor was William Hartnell, and they brought his character back at one point after Hartnell had died, and it was like an actor playing William Hartnell's Doctor, but that doesn't count necessarily. But
so is the Doctor Who's this in all these shows and all these years? Is it the same Doctor?
Yeah, it's a really cool thing they did.
It's like James Bond. It's like all these people.
It is and it isn't. Like it is. It James Bond's kind of like in a suspension of disbelief. Like it's kind of the same guy. And there's been some fan.
But the character. Theories. I'm saying the yeah, character. Yeah. There's James Bond.
But I'm saying that. What I'm saying is James Bond is like. There's the idea, it's just an actor playing the character, whereas in Doctor Who, they have actually written into the show why he's a different person.
Oh.
And that's why it's different about James Bond. Now, there are fan theories about James Bond that suggest that it actually is a different spy, but James Bond is a code word just like 007 is. Mm. And so like But that's not necessarily.
I can
confirmed.
Tell you right now,
that's
those people canon. Don't know what the fuck they're talking yeah. about. I was in the James Bond fan club back in the 60s.
Well, you know he's black now.
That's never going to happen.
Unless they have Rush Limbaugh has his way.
I hope to God it
happens. Well, that's the funny thing. That story broke and people went nuts about it. All that happened was the head of Sony was like, hey, it'd be kind of cool if we had this guy. But like, Daniel Craig is still playing James Bond. He's in the next movie. Like, it's not going to happen next. It's like, and also. Idris Elba is awesome, so I'd be. Totally
I agree.
I know. I'm just. I'm like, but
we're
please?
Talking Stringer Bell here.
Yeah, and there's exactly Luther. I mean, this guy's he's great. But so with Doctor Who, it's funny. We just got to this point on our podcast that we do about it. So the show started in '63, and it started a man named William Hartnell. And Hartnell was older, and he was sick. He had this disease where his arteries were like hardening, and he got to a point where he was having a really hard time. Back then, they filmed year round. They never had like a week off or vacation. But he was having a really hard time getting his lines out. He was weak. He was suffering. And they finally were like, we can't do this with him anymore. We're going to replace him. And then rather than just do like a James Bond thing where they just like threw somebody else in, like he's the Doctor now, they wrote in this thing where the Doctor's race can regenerate when they die.
Right.
And they actually transform into a different person. And they even made it where the different actor, like, it's not like the exact same personality the way James Bond kind of is. It's actually like he's kind of a different guy. And the idea is like when you regenerate, like your brain changes a little bit because your cells have changed or whatever. So the idea is that it's the same core character, but with a completely different personality. So it's been wildly different.
Who's
over the
Doctor Who now?
Right now is a man named Peter Capaldi, which
and
is
who
pretty
was before
cool.
that?
Before that, it was Matt Smith.
Okay.
And then of the revival years, it's been Christopher Eccleston, David Tennant, Matt Smith.
Now,
and Peter
David
Capaldi.
Tennant was like the really popular one, right? Because he's so good.
David Tennant and Matt Smith are the two that were like the mainstream, most popular.
So,
ones.
What is the okay? So that's the basic premise of it. Like, what's the basic premise of the show? So you've got Doctor Who. Like, what is his mission?
So the basic idea is the Doctor is, like I said, he's from this race that they call themselves the Time Lords, and they're from this planet Gallifrey. And I know that sounds ridiculous on paper. The very
sounds like Scientology to me.
Yeah, the very basic premise of the show, like going back to like the original first episode where you didn't know anything about the idea of Time Lord or Gallifrey, that didn't get brought into later in the series. He's just this guy who's kind of this exile from his planet who just kind of travels the universe, and he has this time machine that's this machine called the TARDIS, which stands for Time and Relative Dimensions in Space. It looks like a blue police box, and basically, it's just the idea that he goes from planet to planet and gets into adventures and gets into like mishaps or whatever throughout time and space. And that's the very basic core of it, is like this weird, mysterious guy who brings people with him on these misadventures.
Is this considered science fiction?
It is. It's okay. Very much science fiction.
So yeah. What do you think the broad appeal of the show is? Like, why is it so popular?
I think the appeal of the show, besides just pure entertainment, is that, so if you break down to that core idea, it's this mysterious guy in this box that can take you on these wild adventures. So like on the show, in addition to the doctor, you always have the doctor's companions, and they're always typically contemporary people, that not always, but usually it's like when it came back in 05, it's this woman named Rose. It's like a shop girl who lives in London. She's like a 19-year-old, kind of just an average person. And then this man appears with this magical box that takes her away into adventures. And I think that's a very like fairy tale esque, just like it's right. A very escapist, like very vicarious thing to enjoy.
It's like the right. Bridget Jones Diary goes time travel.
Yeah.
And why do you think it's now starting to catch on so much in the U.S.?
I think it's just a fun show. I think it has a very particular, like, cheeky bit of, like, British humor. And I think that the big reason when it blew up in America was during the run of Matt Smith as the Doctor, which was the 11th Doctor. And he was kind of this, like, young, charming. He was the youngest actor to ever play the role. And he was very young and charming, but he also had like an edge to him where he was at the same time like 26 years old and also seemed like he could easily be 900 years old, which the character was at the time.
Right.
And he just, yeah, so he seemed like very world weary. And so I think there was just something appealing about him as a character of being this guy who's like a very sweetheart, boyfriendy kind of guy who could also be very dangerous.
It's just on BBC America, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, do you think it has to do with, like, sort of the emergence of geek culture
absolutely.
In the U.S.?
And do you, and like, I've never watched it, and she's never watched it, so if we were to start anywhere, where would you tell us to start?
The episode that is pretty universally considered the episode to start with, if you go on Netflix, there's an episode
in
season 3 called... Yeah, there was a moment where BBC and Netflix were going to like break their contract because it was like up and they weren't going to renew, and people were losing their mind like, Doctor Who won't be on Netflix, what are we going to do? It's also on Hulu, but it's back, it's there. There's an episode in season 3 called Blink that is almost universally considered the best first episode to watch.
Right.
Because it's actually interesting that the Doctor is not that prevalent in the episode. They did a couple episodes in the early seasons that were called Doctor Light episodes. They're basically made so the production team could like film around the hectic schedule the Doctor and his companions had. So it's almost a story where the Doctor is almost like an ancillary character. So it's a really good idea of like giving you an idea of what this universe is and what's happening in it without having to like delve into the mythology.
Cool.
A lot of people struggle with the first season of the revival with Crystal Eccleston because the show had kind of not found its feet yet, and Eccleston's Doctor is a little bit prickly and like hard to like. I love him, but a lot of people don't, and so I think that Tennant one is a good one to get into, and then I think starting his run and going from there, and then once you're into it, going back to watch Eccleston.
So it sounds like it's a very whimsical show.
It is very whimsical. Like one of the writers for the original classic era was Douglas Adams, who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and so it has a lot of that kind of.
Okay, well, see, now I'll watch it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all you had to say.
Yeah.
Well, no, because so many friends I have are really into the show, and then I'm like, oh, it's like, okay, so there's like no sex, there's no real violence, there's no like.
There's a lot of violence, but it's not gory violence.
Yeah, like none of the hallmarks of like, you know, so like Rose and the Doctor aren't banging.
No. Well, there is love stories, but it's not like HBO love stories. It's like.
Right, right.
The one thing
it's like compared to The Wire, say.
Yeah, there's no realism to it.
Or
yeah.
Even just like, but even if you look at other shows that people are really fervent about, like Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, Doctor Who definitely stands out as a like.
Yeah.
What's different here? Like,
it's
something's
really
different.
It's really silly. Because I think the show originally was meant to be more of a kid's show. And there's a lot of debate about whether it is or isn't a show for kids. Because it gets pretty scary at times. And it gets really, like, dark at times, too. Like, when they brought back the show in 2005, one of the big plot points was the idea that there had been this massive war called the Time War. And the Doctor had ended the Time War. It was between his race, the Time Lords, and the main antagonist race on the show, the Daleks, which are kind of like the Klingons or the Borg of the Doctor Who universe.
The Sleestak.
Like that, yeah. There actually are Sleestak-like characters on Doctor Who as well.
oh my god!
But the idea was that there was this huge time, century-spanning war, because they both have time travel, and they were like rewriting history in this war and destroying whole galaxies, or whatever. Right. The Doctor destroyed, he ended the war by destroying his own race and the Daleks, so he was like the last survivor of the war. So for the first like 10 years of the revival, he's had this like heavy weight on his shoulders of like knowing he destroyed two whole races of beings. Yeah. So... a little bit dark at times, but somehow also silly and like light. And that's the thing. It's a really silly, fun show with like just madcap adventure stuff. And then, yeah, there's some really dark, heavy stuff too. Wow. So,
a lesson.
Yeah.
But it's crazy because for my whole life, I've always been a big fan of BBC television shows anyways. Yeah. I love English shows, you know, tons of them, whether it's from stupid Top Gear to Skins to whatever. So, yeah. But I never gave Doctor Who any time, but now I want to.
For me, it's just because of so many geeky friends that are really into it, and it's like, you know, most of the way I could meet them halfway with, I'm like, I get why that's interesting.
Yeah.
And the Doctor, it's like, I remember sitting down and trying to watch it and just being like,
I love the fact that like you can impress them one day, you're at a bar, you're drinking with your friends, and just like, yeah, that reminds me of that episode of Doctor Who.
I have converted people. I have against it. And like one day she like sprained her ankle and she couldn't like leave her apartment. And so she texted me and she's like, all right, I'm giving this a shot. And she plowed through the first season, which there are good episodes in the first season, but there are terrible episodes in the first season too. But she got really into it. And I think a lot of people are afraid to get into it because they think you have to go back and watch all the really old ones, and you really don't. And in fact, having started doing that for my podcast, they don't really explain much about the show anyway. It's not like if you go back and watch them.
A whole podcast about it. Like, can you tell me like what is your listenership like? Like, what is, like, what, like, what, how is that, like, the, it seems like the culture of the show, like, I guess my curiosity is more like when something becomes culty.
Yeah.
Like, what's that about? Like, what's your take on, like, why it has such cult appeal? Like,
well, what's so funny about Doctor Who fans especially is that up until, I would say, the Matt Smith point of Doctor Who, even when the show was back, Doctor Who fans were almost like the nerds amongst nerds. Like, it was the thing where, yeah, okay, you're into Star Trek, Star Wars, like a lot of people are, but Doctor Who, all right, nerd. Like, it was like, it was a very small, especially in America.
Yeah.
In England, it was huge. I mean, it was like the big sci-fi thing in Britain. Like, it was like the way Star Trek is here, which is why it lasted for so long. I mean, it was on.
But you're right. In America,
it was
really
a really obscure thing to be a fan of.
Subculture kind of
like
thing.
Pretty much, you only really got a chance to see it if you watched PBS as a kid, and like they had the Tom Baker ones on, but which is the fourth Doctor. But so those people, I almost feel sorry for them in a way that now this thing that for so long was like, no, I'm really cool because I'm the special kind of nerd because I have this fandom. Now it's such a big thing, and there's toys, and there's like,
I was in the mall, and they were selling dresses that looked like, I know, I was in the mall.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, what?
I was in the Burbank Mall. Yeah, yeah. And
at the Hot Topic?
No.
Oh, that's where they had the dresses at. I bought them.
They had a dress that was like the police box dress. Yeah. And I was like, here's the thing, I don't know what Doctor Who is, but I know just enough to know that it's being like culturally appropriated.
Yeah. there's a brand called Her Universe, and the whole idea of Her Universe is taking like nerd properties and making them accessible for women. So the same company that makes a Doctor Who dress like that also has like a Boba Fett Star Wars dress. And they actually like, they're licensed at Disney now. They're selling on there. And Nerdist is like working with her as well. And so, yeah, it's like, and she has like dresses that look like Thor and Loki.
No,
and
it's, this is really interesting. This sort of also the female infiltration of nerd culture.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a big part of what made Doctor Who become a big deal. I think that for a female viewer, Doctor Who was kind of this romantic fairy tale fantasy a little bit, because here's, especially the Matt Smith era, because that was kind of the tone that the new writer at the time, Stephen Moffat, gave it. Like, the beginning of his season begins, like, he's just regenerated into Matt Smith, and his like TARDIS crashes, and there's like a little girl who like wakes up and meets him or whatever, and then he comes back, and it's like 12 years later for her now, and then she becomes the first companion for him, Amy Pond. So it's the idea of this magical man falling from the sky and like giving you this sense of whimsy and stuff like that, and then eventually coming back and like taking you away on these adventures. And so I think that's a big deal.
I heard, is it true that they're going to make a movie?
I hope they had the show. There's always talk about it. I don't think they're going to anytime soon, but they've screened the show in movie theaters.
I thought there was something about they were going to make a movie though.
I think at one point they were talking about making a movie as like a way to bring it back before the show came back.
Yeah.
But I don't think right now there's any plans on making it a theatrical film at this point. I think, yeah, I know they're talking about making a new Battlestar Galactica movie. It's not related to the TV show, but yeah.
Kind of excited about that.
Yeah, yeah. I think Bryan Singer's involved in it, or at least he was at one point. But
oh my God.
I'm just more obsessed with like cult shows and like the kind of like this the idea of fandom and the sort of the human need to to kind of do these just sort of like to group
like,
up.
I know what you're saying. It's like I always say to everybody, like it's like funny how you know growing up as a kid there were shows like that. The first seasons of Battlestar Galactica, and you know especially because back then it was like science fiction and not really was new to television. But I like shows like that. And like now my joke is, and I just said this to Audrey last week, I'm so hooked into Vanderpump Rules. I go, it's like, it's my cult show for me. Even though I watch everything else, I'm like obsessed with Vanderpump Rules.
Well, that's the thing about Doctor Who for me was that because I was always really nerdy as a kid and I was really into Star Trek and Star Wars. And I loved Indiana Jones and Ghostbusters and stuff like that. And as I got older, I kind of felt, I loved Buffy in high school. I was super into Buffy and Joss Whedon stuff.
Never watched it.
But as I got older, I kind of fell off of it because I think the big appeal to me about science fiction was it always had better stories.
Yeah.
And most, like...
Definitely. I think that definitely more, like,
more creative. More creative.
Because most dramatic shows on TV at that era were very episodic, like Law and Order type shows.
Right, but if you think about it,
lines.
That's the beauty of science fiction to me is that, like, you're doing a show about a hospital and a bunch of people and St. Elsewhere. You're limited. You can only write about so much people. But when you're science fiction, whether it's Firefly or something like that, you can create your own universe with your own people doing their own things.
Right.
So, and like you said, you can. And if an actor dies, well, we can come up with a way to make them regenerate themselves.
Right. I think my tastes were very much for that reason. And then I kind of started to go a lot more mainstream as mainstream dramas started to become more story-based, like with The Sopranos and then the advent of that golden era of TV drama. I stopped watching as much sci-fi and getting as invested in sci-fi as I used to. And it actually bummed me out at one point when I realized, oh, I don't know that much about sci-fi and fantasy anymore. Right. I wasn't reading comics anymore because I just didn't have time for them. And yet, so the two shows and books and stuff that really got me back into it were Doctor Who and Game of Thrones. Like, in those two things...
Did you read the books of Game of Thrones?
I plowed through them. Yeah,
All of them so far?
I read all of them so far, yeah.
Holy fuck.
Yeah,
I tried to
award for that.
I tried to get through the first one at an airport, but I...
Yeah. I basically watched the first episode of the show, and I this is amazing, and then I went looked it up online and saw there were all these books that it was based on. I didn't know anything about it until the show came on. What do you like better, the books or the show? You know what? I'm the kind of person where I don't have that kind of distinction. Like,
it's like one or the other. They're both
good. I love adaptations for that reason. So the joy of the Game of Thrones books for me is that they're told in this very limited character perspective where each chapter is one character like point of view, and so you get everything about that character in a really cool way. What's cool about the show is the opposite, where you get this really broad perspective on things that you wouldn't have gotten in the book. So they both work in their own magical way. Like, for example, the best example I can think of is that Tywin Lannister, who's played by Charles Dance in the series, is such an awesome character in the show. But you don't see that much of him in the book. His only real presence is how he's affecting other characters, like how they see him, how they interact with him. Whereas on the show, you get all these really great moments with him. Like, there's a great moment with him and Arya Stark at Harrenhal that's not in the books at all. Right. But it's like, I love the show does that. And that's why I always hate when people get mad at adaptations.
Me too.
For not being exactly like, I'm like, well, then just read the book.
Yeah, but it's so funny.
Well, no, because I didn't read the perfect example of that is Beloved. Did you ever see... Mm-hmm. Okay, there's... Toni Morrison wrote this amazing Pulitzer Prize winning book, Beloved. And it got remade
by
Oprah Winfrey.
Is there any aliens in it?
No.
Oh, well, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, okay, yeah.
But it got remade... Like, Oprah Winfrey made a movie of it. And it was like this 3-hour... And like the whole thing was like completely faithful to the book. Like... And so, yeah, it's like I went to show up. It's like Beloved was like this amazing fucking story. And it's like, holy shit. Like, let's check it out. And I left and I went like, this is why... You should never stay faithful to the novel because there's certain things that a novel can do
that
visually are and it was like the thing, it's like this movie could have been epic and instead it was like, oh, this is boring because it's like in the novel this worked being inside someone's head and like it was like whatever, but like, you know.
But this is why like these days I love like when Game of Thrones started, I was like, I don't want to read these books, and my webmaster read them all and she was like, ugh! And I was like, I just go to the Wikipedia page, I read the thing, I'm good to go. And she's like, you can't, that's cheating. And I go, fuck it, I don't care. I'm reading what I want to read, and I'm going to watch what I'm going to watch. I go, I don't have time to sit and read a novel.
Yeah.
Who's time for that? I don't have time for that.
That's fair.
But I thought what I liked about Game of Thrones, though, the one thing I have liked about it, what's season 5 starts there,
yeah,
is just the
so
way
excited.
The
I've
way
I've never watched it.
So good.
I just love the way, though, that what they can do in a series like this, they can't do in a movie.
Right.
It
I actually think really from now on, if you really want to adapt a book, you should make it into a TV show and not a movie.
It takes time. And you have to invest. You have to invest the time to watch these characters grow, and you invest that time, and you get either rewarded or hurt. But like you get, it take. I love how it just takes its time.
Well, those shows are so those books are so dense that even making it into a show, they have to cut stuff out and they have to rearrange events and like because there's things that happened in season 4 of Game of Thrones that most of season 4 was still book 3.
Exactly.
Like they've barely touched book 4, and now they're gonna get into books 4 and 5 in season 5 because the way
how many books are in the series?
There's 5 right now. There's going to be 7 total in theory.
In theory.
But the way he wrote books 4 and 5 was he split up the events so they weren't chronological split up. They were split up like he basically, like, this area of the world is happening in this book and this area of the world is happening in this book and then they eventually re-meet so, like, the timelines reconverge. So what they did with the show is they kind of put some of those book 4 events into season 3 and they put some of them in season 5 so they can kind of catch up with the writing.
It's intense.
Can you imagine? Like, I just look at like J.K. Rowling or Martin.
Yeah.
And it's like, can you, as a writer, because that was my first passion, and you were do you just like sit back and you're like, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's still
like the fucking
He can't sit back because he has to finish the books.
But still, it's that,
he's
that
not
thing
getting
of,
any
like,
younger.
But can you imagine? It's like to stumble into like
I just don't know how they organize it all.
Well, that's what he talks about that, about like how some writers write, he calls them architects and farmers. Some writers have this whole pre-planned thing out, and then some kind of like plant ideas and they grow, and then you eventually have to kind of organize them. And he says like the whole series came out of just this vision that he had of a wolf being stabbed in the neck by the elk, which is like the very beginning when they find the wolf cubs. And the wolf cubs in the snow being like what set off that whole series. And it is really weird. And same thing with J.K. Rowling, of like being on a bus stop and like thinking about this Harry Potter storyline, and some people say she ripped it off, but I think it's
who's Harry Potter
writing.
Again?
He's the boy who lived.
I'm just kidding. I know who Willy Wonka is. No, I'm just kidding.
He's the Candyman.
Yeah.
It is weird to think about, like, just you have this one vision and then this like seed and it grew from there.
Oh, I know. I love that thing. Like, that's my own career. Like,
I've spent 5 years working on a 7-novel series.
Yeah.
I did in one summer. I drafted up like a 7-novel series, like over 7 generations of a family.
Oh, wow.
And like when people are like, what are you writing about? And I was just like, I'm just working on a novel.
Writing?
Like it was just this thing. I was like, it's just a novel. Cause it's like too much to be like, it's a fucking world. And like, you've been working on this for 5 years. And I'm like, I'm building a world, asshole.
I love
it.
To go circle here though, is there Doctor Who books?
Oh yeah.
There are?
There's Doctor Who books, there's Doctor Who comics, there's Doctor Who like radio plays. Because in the eras where the show wasn't on anymore, they were still doing like radio dramas. Which aren't necessarily considered canon with the show, but sometimes there's like a lot of... The thing that's funny about Doctor Who is they seem to have no concern for plot holes and continuity most of the time. And they like the guy who writes it right now, Stephen Moffat, who is both loved and reviled by Doctor Who fans in a way that it's amazing. It's so entertaining to watch. People just get pissed. Because that's the thing about fandom. You know, we talked about fandom earlier. There is a thing I don't like about fandom on the internet where people almost act like they have some level of ownership over the show. And if somebody does something they don't like, they act like they're being betrayed or this is how it should have gone. And like, you can have criticism for a thing you like, I totally appreciate it, but there is a weird level where it bothers me at times where if something isn't exactly how you want it to be, it's terrible. But it's like, or maybe they're just trying something different. Like, you don't want a show to be everything you want it to be
the same
all
thing.
The time, or you won't be satisfied.
Yeah, but it's the same thing with music and bands. Like, as soon as a band tries to do something different, and if it's not,
so mad.
It's like, you're like, what are you doing? I like, what are we going to do? Yeah. Play the same song over and over again for the rest of our lives? No.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Like, with Game of Thrones, there's been some very, like, I mean, obviously they're having to follow a book to some degree, but there's been some character deaths where people, like, they die and they go, well, I'm never going to watch the show again because I love that character.
Yeah.
And I go, that's the worst response you should have to like
the Red Wedding.
You're watching a show where anything can happen and it's not predictable. That's really impressive. Like, how do you not love that?
But
you
it's
know,
like my thing is like when the Red Wedding happened, I kept on saying to everybody, all I had to do is go read Wikipedia. And I knew like, I'm not going to get too upset because I know some things that happened down the line.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think people get into these things. It's like when you can adapt them sort of like biblical stories or anything else. It's like you can kind of adapt them as like these internal mythologies. Yeah, and then you get like connected to them, just like the way people love sports or something. Yeah. It's like they get kind of this.
As soon as a player gets traded, it's like,
It's like they, because they kind of sort of have this sort of like social identity with. Yeah.
So with, it's sad, but it's just funny though. When I the last few years, I mean, you can see it on TV, on Netflix, on everything, how this is becoming such a huge big deal. Whether it's Netflix is going to have what, three, I think maybe four Marvel shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Four. And like, is it four? I think. And then like how
there's a Daredevil one. Yeah. And there's like Jessica and Jones like, and two other.
And
ones.
Then there's, you know, you read on the internet, there's all these different types of shows that are being developed about knights and like even look at Netflix had Marco Polo. You know, all these. It's just like everybody's realizing, hey, you know, we can be more creative. And I think as actors, which 20 years ago, an actor would never be caught dead in a comic book movie, now wants to be in them.
Yeah, I mean, Robert Redford was in Captain America too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it's not the fact that he's even, you know that in his head he's probably like, okay, yeah, the paycheck's good, but he's also saying, you know what?
Yeah.
It's a good character to play. I can really have fun with this. So it's like, it makes perfect sense. You know what I mean? Like,
I got really annoyed. I was watching Real Time with Bill Maher recently, and he had Catherine Bigelow on the show, and she was promoting some documentary I do too. She had made like a short film documentary about elephants. It's like a cartoon thing, and it looked great. But he brought up this whole other unrelated topic about, he did that whole thing where you talk about the highest grossing films of all time, if you adjust them for inflation, is still Gone with the Wind and Sound of Music, which I think there's a lot of like criticism of that list. But his whole thing was like, you know, it used to be Gone with the Wind and Sound of Music, and now it's all superheroes and aliens. And he goes, have we gotten dumber as a writer? I go, maybe we have, maybe those things have gotten smarter. Yeah. Also, maybe it's because technology has increased to a point where these fantastic stories can be told in a way that's not like about 1977 when Superman the movie came out. The tagline for the movie was bragging that you make him like you believe a man can fly.
Right.
That was the tagline. We made like this guy is theater. Flying. Yeah, and it's like that's we're so far from that now. That it's like, that's why these movies are being made the way they are now, because they can, and they can make these sprawling epics.
And the bottom of it, the line is money, and it's also it's entertainment. I don't go to, like I always tell people, I rarely have gone to or will watch, I like to watch serious films.
I do too.
I will, but I really will go to, if I'm going to spend $20, I want to be entertained. I want to come out with a smile on my face.
And I think there is a difference between good popcorn movies and bad popcorn movies. And the thing is, I also think that his argument's flawed, because I think Gone with the Wind and Sound of Music are the comic book movies and superhero movies of that era.
I was there.
It's a sweeping romance.
When did Scarlett O'Hara represent any kind of every woman? Yeah, I mean, that was like a heroic figure to like the
when
time
I was in
period.
Third grade in Catholic school, third grade in Catholic school, our nuns took us to see
Sound of Music.
Of Music. It was like a big deal.
Yeah.
And we were like, okay. And then we're like coming out of the theater like, what are Nazis? Like, what the hell is a Nazi?
Right.
You know?
And then you saw Indiana Jones. Like, those are bad guys.
But also, and then I always tell people, fast forward years later, in 1976, I went to go see the movie Silver Streak, Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
One of the great, funniest movies ever made.
Gene Wilder. Yeah.
Before the movie started, we saw a trailer for this wacky movie called Star Wars, and this robot fell over.
Changed everything.
And we all, my friends and I looked at each other and we're like, this looks like the stupidest movie. Everybody was laughing. Like, is this a comedy? We're like, is this a comedy? Are you, what is a stupid thing? And then like a month later, we found ourselves in line for the 10th time, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was like, we thought it was the stupidest thing ever. And then all of a sudden was like, oh my God. And I think I actually did see it in the theater. I talked to Bobby about this once. Because we grew up in the same city. It was like, I probably saw it in the theater during that time in 77.
Yeah, well, that's why Star Wars is, even when you adjust for inflation, I think it's like number two of all time below Gone with the Wind.
I think I saw it like 15 times.
But that's why I think that list of what the highest grossing ones of all time is a little bit flawed.
Right.
Because I think there was less movies being made back then. Some movies were in theaters longer. And also, you didn't have home video. So you would go back to the theater during run to see it. So
we didn't
would see Gone with the Wind over and over again.
Yeah, we didn't have all that stuff that you have now. And I remember when we did, my friend did get the first Betamax. And we were like so excited. We went and bought a James Bond movie. And we bought Blazing Saddles. And we watched Blazing Saddles like five times in a row one afternoon.
God.
And we were just like, you know, memorized every line, every joke. And we were like, this is the greatest movie ever. But we were like so excited. We played.
Well, I remember
like,
Freaks and Geeks is a whole plot line where they were excited to get a print of Monty Python's Holy Grail to watch at school in the AV club. Like, we're going to watch Monty Python.
Yeah. But I remember just like watching it one time and then kind of going, wow, we get to rewind and watch it again?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's the thing. Like when you adjust for inflation, you have to remember like it used to be cheaper, even with inflation differences, it was cheaper for you to go to the movies than it is now. Because even though, inflation happened, it's expensive to go see a movie nowadays. So, like, I personally, like, I love going to the movies. I treat it like that's like the closest thing I have to church.
Yeah.
It's like ritualistic. I love getting the popcorn. I love the whole experience of the trailers and everything. But at this point, I have a pretty nice TV and I have a very comfortable couch and I can make popcorn at home. So if it's a movie like The King's Speech or something, I'd rather watch that at home. If I'm going to go to the theater, I want something that's going to be like this really engrossed. Like, I think Gravity was a great movie to see in the theater. Yeah. I saw that in 3D IMAX. It was awesome. I saw Guardians of the Galaxy in the theater. You know, I'll see that. But when it comes to a movie like Foxfire that I've heard is really, really good, or Whiplash.
Right.
I'll wait till it's home. Yeah. I'll watch it at home, you know?
I just know that I haven't been to the movies in like 15 years.
Well, I did see Birdman in the theater, but
that's
the
only too. Like,
I want to see that movie. Is it good?
It's very
Thumbs
good.
Thumbs up?
It's very good. I think
it's really, really well acted. I'm not sure I love the movie as much as a lot of other people do, but okay. I enjoyed it. I love Keaton.
I mean, as a writer, it was very satisfying. I was like, oh, look how tightly they're sealing that narrative. Yes.
Someone made a joke that Birdman and Whiplash were easy to make because they just used the same soundtrack for both movies.
I think this has been hands down the quietest I've been during a podcast while I was learning all about the past and geekiness.
Well, we had to learn about Doctor Who.
Well, no, I just like listened to you two go was like an experience.
The takeaway I'll say about Doctor Who, if you're interested in it and you do want to watch it, I think that just letting go of the idea of like needing to be invested in this mythology of the show is the best way to do it, and just be like, you know, there's a silly guy with a box who takes you on adventures, and as you watch the show, I think you pick up on the details of it.
And so watch Blink.
I would definitely say watch Blink.
Season 3.
All
right.
And that's on Netflix. Martha Jones.
It's on Netflix.
I'll do it and I'll like live tweet it. Live tweet my Blink experience. No, I'm going to I'll do it.
I would say watch Blink, and then I would also say after you've watched Blink, go to season 2 and watch The Girl in the Fireplace. Because that's a great example of the show in an actual episode where the doctor's involved. That really, in my opinion, encapsulates kind of the more sad elements of the show. And also, what I love about the show is my appeal for me is I love weird planets that's why I love Futurama. I like weird planets with weird things happening. And so the villains in that episode is really cool, like clockwork robots that are neat to watch. And so that's a fun one. And so I would say that's a good one to watch after Blink to be like, okay, this is kind of this is the show in a nutshell for me.
Okay. Sounds awesome. So I will be watching that and live tweeting it. I'll try to coordinate that with the release of this particular episode.
Nice.
So this has been Observations with me, your host, Sovereign Sire. And you can find me at my website, ilovesov.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Sovereign Sire, SOVEREIGNSYRE. And I would like to give a special thank you to our guest, Rye Silverman. How can people find you?
And you can find me on the Twitter as @RyeSilverman. And you can go to RyeSilverman.com. And that will give you a portal to my blog and my Tumblr and my...
Is your podcast there?
My podcast is not there. My podcast is on iTunes. It's called Laughing at Archaeologists.
Awesome.
And it's a good podcast if you are a Doctor Who fan, but you've never delved into the classic series and don't really have the time to, the idea of the show is kind of like, you can watch the show along with us if you want to. The idea is we basically watch, because the old shows were done as serialized arcs, and they basically, so you might, it's like a, like, one storyline might be like 6 episodes. And so we watch all the episodes and we kind of condense them into like a 20 to 40 minute podcast that kind of breaks down and makes fun of it a little bit, so...
Awesome. All right. Well, I'll have to actually check it out. I'll have to like watch along. Now I'm intrigued. I'm going to crack the Doctor Who nut.
Well, I don't recommend to people who are trying to decide if they want to like the show or not. I don't recommend going to the classics right away because they are not very good. They're low budget.
I always want to start at the beginning. Yeah. I don't know. All right. Well, this was a lovely and fun and educational episode of Observations. Who is Doctor Who? And I will see all of you lovely people next week in our next episode.